You're listening to a podcast by the United Nations Research Institute for Social Development.
Now we move to India, and we give you the floor. I'm sorry, I'm not sure that I will pronounce exactly.
Abhijit.
Abhijit, you are a PhD in strategy and organization in McGill University. You have worked a lot about strategy process and social entrepreneurship, and you will present us a case of Amul Cooperative, which is what do you say, farmers cooperative. You will you put the stress not on outcomes, but on processes. This is a common focus with the two former panelists to understand the social interactive dynamics by which these outcomes are achieved. And you will show the link between processes and production and the type of production. It's very important for us to hear from you. So you have the floor.
Thank you, Nicole, for the introduction. And I also thank the organizers for having me here, for giving me the opportunity to present my paper. This paper comes out of my PhD thesis at McGill. And the title of this paper is Embeddedness in the Dynamics of Growth, the Case of Amul Cooperative India. Amul is today India's most successful cooperative. It's a cooperative in the dairy sector. And just to give you an idea, it's actually based in Gujarat state of India, in Kheda district, and today counts 650,000 members that it serves, and serves rather well. So that's the outline of the presentation. So in terms of research motivation, what really motivated this research, besides the fact that I was really very passionate about cooperatives and very passionate about what we now call the social economy, what really motivated this research was a theoretical sort of problem, and the problem located within the broader domain of strategic management was to gain an embedded understanding of processes, to understand the sort of micro-macro interaction between strategic initiatives of managers within an organization and the broader context that enables, constrains, and constitutes these strategies. So basically, that was the general research motivation. In terms of specific research motivation was to understand the embeddedness of strategy processes within the context of a cooperative. In terms of relevant literature, I'll go through this very quickly because I know my time is short. In terms of the literature gap, the literature gap that I located was, in the strategic management literature. And the strategic management literature suffers from this dichotomy. it has this dichotomy embedded within it. And here is my attempt to present that dichotomy. Strategic management literature has been broadly divided into two streams, the process literature and the content literature. The process literature basically talks about the immediacy and the relevance and the importance and significance of action. The focus is on emergent processes, that is, in other words, unintended order. The focus is also on sort of the lack of a telio, lack of purpose, and almost sort of a muddling sort of way of being. And the process literature downplays agency, downplays, and also downplays agency and reinforces inertia. On the other hand, you have the content literature, which sort of focuses, rather than on action, it focuses on intention of managers and focuses on systems that are more deliberate, well thought out, well conceived, planned in advance, and focuses on systematic analysis and inflates the role of intent. So in order to sort of resolve this dualism, and borrowing from Giddens structuration theory, in order to acknowledge the sort of duality between action and intention, I thought it most appropriate to go with this notion of embedded strategy. Embedded strategy, in a nutshell, basically recognizes the interaction or the reciprocal interaction between action and intention, and recognizes that while human beings are purposive, at the same time, purposive action occurs within a certain context. And so there is this duality or recursive sort of interaction between agency and context. So two things to be underlined here. One is the notion of purposiveness, which is further elaborated by the notion of strategic intent. And the second is this whole notion of action being situated within a broader context, because action, if devoid of context, has no meaning, has no sense, does not make sense. So I underline the importance of both of these, strategic intent as well as situatedness of action within a broader context. The second literature gap that I found was in the discussion of cooperatives in the management literature. And one of the things that has come up in recent times, strategy scholars have pointed out that co-ops are hybrid entities, which means that they have socioeconomic goals, not just economic ones. And they are more pluralistic and embedded. What they mean by pluralistic and embedded is basically that they pursue multiple goals and they have diffuse structures of power which allow multiple constituents to influence the nature of goals pursued as well as the means that are used to pursue these goals. So given this pluralistic context, what do cooperatives really do? We know that cooperatives help, or at least they strive to empower marginalized communities, and they try and prevent exploitation, and they're characterized by means which are democratic, which is enshrined in the very values that they subscribe to, such as one member, one vote. Cooperatives are organizations in which market relations are replaced by relationships of ownership and control, as well as self-provision. And therefore, there is reason to believe that strategy making within the context of a cooperative is likely to be more pluralistic, and it's likely to be the very nature by which strategies are made within these organizations, one can argue, is likely to be more pluralistic and more democratic as well as more political. Because if you think about it, cooperatives are often blocks of or bases of voting power. You know, they represent these huge, especially in the case of India, where the membership is 650,000 members, they are a voting block unto themselves, and a lot of these politicians would therefore like to be in control of these cooperatives, and therefore, by being in control of these cooperatives, if they work well for these cooperatives, and if they generate certain minimum returns for their farmers, for the farmer members, then there is a possibility that they can capture office at higher levels. You know, there have been cases where chairman of Amul has gone on to become the chief minister of Gujarat. So this explains to you how, in the case of cooperatives at least, one must realize that structures of power or the political process is not really exogenous per se, because the political process should be seen more as involved and as endogenous, because you have people within the board who actually also are, you know, share other political offices and are therefore likely to bring to bear this power that they have from their political office into the cooperative. So the main gaps that I identified were that we need to better understand strategy making in such pluralistic contexts, and especially in resource-constrained contexts like India. Also, the strategy process underlying the growth phase of these cooperatives needs to be better understood. And finally, a quick review of the studies of cooperatives. There are not very many studies of cooperatives in management literature, and the very few that there are, they either have these very macro focus, they look at social change, and they take a perspective, the population level perspective, Or on the other hand, they are very micro, and they look at membership identity or commitment within the organization. So what is missing is a kind of embedded analysis which looks at interaction between the micro and macro. So that's the research question. How are cooperatives' growth strategies formed and embedded within the broader socioeconomic and political context? In other words, how are these strategic growth initiatives embedded within the broader context? And what is the nature of interaction between strategic growth initiatives and the broader socio-political context? And how does this interaction shape the growth of cooperatives? So very quickly, this is the context. This is where I did my field work in the state of Gujarat in India, and within Gujarat in a district called Kheda District. This gives you a quick comparative analysis of the cooperative between the years 1946 and 2008. Amul, India's most successful co-op. These are the range of products that Amul manufactures. In terms of research design, the methodological approach that I adopted was one of longitudinal processual approach, which basically looks at an entity over time. The field study was conducted over a period of 9.5 months, spanning 3 different levels of analysis: the village level, at the district level, and the state level. So village level, you have village cooperative societies. At the district level, you have district unions. And at the state level, you have the federation. This is how I collected data, using archival interviews and ethnographic observations. This is a quick snapshot of the timeline of Amul, the history of Amul. So from 46 to 52, I characterized this as a period of emergence and early growth. From 55 to 62, this was a period of intense product and market diversification. And from 62 to 76 was a period of services innovation. So these are the activities or initiatives taken by Amul at the micro level. And then I juxtapose the macro level. What was going on at the macro level? So between 46 and 52, what you had was the politics of nationalism and India trying to build itself as a nation state after having undergone 200 years of colonization. From 55 to 62, India was pursuing this socialist policy of self-sufficiency through import substitution. And between 62 and 76, concerns about food security and productivity for a burgeoning population. So my focus in this paper is on the period between 1955 and 62. Time is short. How much time do I have?
Five.
Only 5 minutes?
Yeah.
I did this over 9.5 months, and I cannot possibly explain this in 5 minutes. So bear with me. But I'll very quickly explain what was going on. As you can see at the top right, you have a company called Polson. Now, Polson was a private monopoly. Just below Polson is another blue box where you find it's written milk producers. And these milk producers of Kheda district were actually being exploited by this private monopoly, Polson, who was patronized by the then British Indian government. So as you can see, there's a green arrow which says clout with the colonial government. And Kheda district, particularly Anand, used to supply most of its milk to the Bombay milk scheme. Kheda and Bombay are 400 miles apart. And because of Polson's clout with the colonial government, it was able to get an executive order from the colonial government for exclusive supply of milk. And the milk producers did not like this because they suddenly found themselves in a situation that they could not sell their milk to anyone else but Polson. And given the situation, they appealed to their leaders at the village level and the district level, leaders who were fighting the freedom movement, and these were people who belonged to the Indian National Congress. And so the milk producers, who had been involved in earlier satyagrahas and revolts and so on, had strong linkages to these independence or freedom fighters. And eventually they went on strike, what they called a milk satyagraha. And the result of that was that the colonial government was brought down to its knees, and they had to agree with the needs, the demands of the producers, which was basically that they should have their own cooperative and that they should be able to supply their milk directly to Bombay Milk Scheme instead of having to go through Polson. So basically that is a story of the emergence. And the story of growth is... Okay, so now I want to explain a little bit about the policy shifts because I'm looking at the interaction between micro and macro. This is at the macro level. So post-1948, India becomes independent in 1947. And post-1948, these were some of the dynamics going on. So there was a capture of power by the Indian National Congress. And India pursued a policy of self-sufficiency through import substitution and a policy of people-centered development. So basically what I want to say is that within Amul, the managers of Amul had these linkages to ministers at the state level and ministers at the national level, and they used this social capital and political capital to influence policymaking. And this, the way they influenced policymaking was remarkable because since India was embarked on this policy of self-sufficiency, Amul's managers made the argument that in order for India to be self-sufficient, Amul needs to be self-sufficient and Amul needs to manufacture its own ice cream and its own, all the dairy products, cheese and baby food and so on. And the only way they can do that is by substantially reducing imports. And that is exactly what the government did. The government, in a phased manner, reduced imports and allowed Amul to flourish. By reducing imports, the competition to Amul went down substantially, and this initial period of protection by the government allowed Amul to flourish, and therefore, this is one of the ways in which the organization was able to scale up by basically lobbying the government and by securing an institutional context for its growth for the initial 20-25 years. So that, in a nutshell, is the story of Amul. Thank you very much.
Check out our other podcasts available free on the iTunes Store. For more information, go to our website, www.unris.org. Thank you for listening.